Blog Talk Radio.
Chasing whatever it is that we are chasing. And right now it's time to take a break, stop running around, relax. Everything is going to work out exactly the way you want it to. If you are calling in, I can see you on the line. I can see 347. Be patient. We will get to you soon. If you don't hang up, we'll be able to. And because we have an amazing show ready for you today, it is time to step into the tippy zone where we explore the other side of reality, the side that allows you to reshape your life, to step into your power and connect to the fact that we are all one. Welcome to Tippy Talk. My name is Tippy Felsenstein and I'm dedicated to explore a life that is lived with clarity, confidence, control and awareness. Tippy Talk is to go from where you are to where you want to be. And that is why we have some amazing guests lined up for you. And today we are so happy to welcome Autumn Shields, who is an amazing, exceptional person. She's a speaker, she's an author, she's a coach and an entrepreneur. And she has the kind of experience that everybody wishes they had, because she was working as a victim advocate director for the police department in Colorado. And that in itself is a lifelong journey, but she didn't stop over there. She went on and she became successful at network marketing, a network marketer, and that actually gave her the ability to move to Hawaii, where we all want to be. And she went on to develop a program to help teenagers, high-risk teenagers. So she has been doing some amazing work, but her passion is to help people overcome their obstacles and to find their true passion. Because as the title of her book says, Living Your Life Alive, she is passionate about helping everybody, helping anybody that she can to live their life alive and to live your life fully. It's really sad that if you don't live your life fully, because the potential is there, the ability for you to do it is there. And Autumn, welcome to Tippy Talk and thank you so much for joining us, because we're so excited that you're here today.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on.
And the more I find out about you, the more impressed I am, because I know a lot of people that do a lot of different things, but not too many people do all those things together. I mean, from one to the other, from being a victim advocate to helping teenagers, to creating different kind of programs, to moving to Hawaii, which some people call the paradise on this planet, and then writing a book on top of it. Some people take a lifetime just to write one book. And so my question, first of all, before anything else, is how do you do it?
feel like I just answer the call in or answering, you know, the nudge, what I call the nudge. I feel like sometimes we have good ideas or sometimes we get pulled in this direction or that direction. But the big things that I've, I guess, answered to in my life has been because of the nudges. I felt a nudge to become a victim advocate and just follow that. And it's one of those things that I feel like if you don't do, when you feel that nudge to do that thing, and it just doesn't go away, you can't just stop it. I mean, sometimes I think you can put it on pause for a while, or you can maybe ignore it for a little while, but it just keeps at you until you actually do those things. And I used to call myself a serial entrepreneur because it seems like there was definitely a lot on my plate or a lot of things I was going. And somebody, I actually listened to a different podcast and somebody used the word unicorn. And it, sometimes unicorns, people are just different because they can do a few different things. And I just felt like I followed the nudges, that it wasn't really something that necessarily I was even passionate about or was on my radar or something that I wanted to do necessarily. But I just feel like I was nudged to do it. And once I accepted, really, once I surrendered to that or accepted that responsibility, the resources appeared. And then I thought, you know, there's no way I could take on this role, or there's no way I'm equipped, or I don't have the schooling, or I don't have the skills. The resources appeared, and that's what's really helped me accomplish what I have.
So basically, you attribute it to beginning with a nudge. Kind of like a calling or a push to do it. And so we have somebody that had the nudge to call in. Do you mind to see if somebody that has any question they might want to ask you directly?
Sure.
Okay, sure. So we have a call from 347 that's on the line, and I have no idea who it is. Hi, who is this?
This is the Goodalls.
Ah,
Robert,
the Goodalls. Wonderful. Can I put you on hold so that we can talk to Autumn and then see if you have any questions you will be able to ask her later?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So, yeah, sometimes you get the nudge to do something and you're not sure why, but I guess then you just follow it. That's very interesting because I think a lot of people get a lot of nudges, but it's very easy to ignore it. How do you not ignore it?
I think I do ignore it up front. I think most people do ignore them up front. And I think one of the main reasons people ignore it is because they just don't see a way to accomplish it, or they think they immediately kind of negate it thinking that's silly, or I've never thought of that before, or I don't have the resources, or I don't have the skill. Like, it's just kind of a silly thought. Like, why would I be doing that? That just doesn't make sense to me. And the way I tell the difference in my life is sometimes I think, okay, well, I have a good idea. But that good idea just kind of maybe goes away, or I just really, it's like the doors don't open. Well, with a nudge, even if I'm ignoring it, it's like I see signs everywhere. And sometimes they're nice, soft signs, but usually with me, it takes me getting kind of hit over the head with something to say, no, this is the path, this is the way, this is the door. Like, it keeps me awake. And to me, it's a little bit shocking at first, but there's a peace about it. It's like getting hit with lightning out of the rarest moments. It's not like I'm thinking about something or in a certain situation where, oh, that would make sense that I would hear that or see that. It's just kind of one of those out of the blue things. But even though it's kind of like shocking, there's that peace about it. There's that calmness about it. And then usually I negate it, and people that I work with, you know, say, you know what, I've been ignoring that nudge for years, but I keep seeing things. It just won't go away. And that's what most people say, is that it just won't go away. And I believe the big difference is people say sometimes about, I have intuition about this, or what's really the difference between intuition and the nudge? Like, well, maybe I do have a good idea, or I have intuition about this certain situation. The difference to me is intuition is like current. It's a current situation that you're in, and you have intuition about it. You know, processing through your senses, and it's kind of that, maybe that sixth sense of processing a certain situation. To me, the nudge is different because it comes out of the blue. And a lot of times people have fun with it. Like, you think about it at first and you think, oh my gosh, that would be exciting, or that would be fun, or, you know, but I could never do that, or I don't have the resources. And so I think we negate it a lot. And I always think, how many times have I been nudged that I've ignored it? How many times have you been nudged that you've ignored it? But also the times that we've been nudged that we've followed it, what comes out of that? And so I encourage people to, you know, first of all, learn how to listen to those nudges, learn how to identify those nudges. And then second of all, surrender to it, because I think sometimes we think, okay, I've heard the nudge, I get it. but then actually surrendering to it. It's very scary for people to surrender to something that they're unfamiliar with, anything that's changed or anything they think, well, why would I be doing something like that? And so really surrendering to it and trusting that process is a whole nother thing. But it's fun to watch people go through the process and learn how to identify it.
I love that you call it the nudge, because I have not heard someone call it that way. And I think it's really an accurate description of what you're trying to say. But the question is, and you said something really powerful. You said, I had to get hit over the head. That's a great metaphor. So I think a lot of people that are listening to you are thinking, well, you know, she's special because she's got those nudges and they're powerful and I don't. So maybe it's for her, but not for me. So was it always like this for you? How did you grow up? Did you grow up with nudges, or is it something you had to grow into and become aware of?
I actually think we all have nudges. We all get nudged very early on. And I actually think we're better at listening to them when we're younger, because we don't have as many negative or false things coming in our lives telling us or defining us or us playing certain roles in our life. So my first nudge that came to me that I remember that I actually followed was in eighth grade. And I had a friend who committed suicide. And through that process, I interacted with a police victim advocate. She came and she spoke to us about, you know, the process of what this is for us in our lives now and the process of losing somebody to suicide. And I remember knowing what I was interested in doing when I was a kid. I think we all start dreaming, like, I want to be a nurse. I want to be a firefighter. I want to be this. But sometimes we don't even know the role or we don't know the titles. But I think sometimes we do have clarity. And then sometimes people tell us, oh, you're not good at that, or that doesn't make money, or you shouldn't do that. And so very early on, we kind of get talked out of maybe what we're designed to do up front. But I always knew what I wanted to do. I just didn't know there was a title to it. And so when she defined her title of her job, I thought, that's what I'm going to do. And I knew very early on, and I felt a nudge. I was sitting there listening to her, and I remember they call them different. It's called different things, but usually a victim advocate or police advocate.
Victim
and
advocate.
Just helping crime victims. Just helping crime victims.
Is it helping them psychologically or helping them deal with what? What does a victim advocate do?
Most victim advocates in most states, there's different victim advocates in different areas, but I wanted to be a police victim advocate. So they're actually usually within the police departments, working for police departments, responding to crisis. So domestic violence, sex assault, active shooters, things like that. And we do crisis intervention, and then we provide resources to help the victims with the next step in their recovery or in the process of court or whatever might be the next step.
So one of the resources might be a psychologist or housing, and one of the resources may be somebody like what you're doing now, because now you have taken being a victim advocate to the next level. And
coaching people.
Right, coaching. So a victim advocate would refer their people to you to coach them back to being healthy. Is that how it works?
Absolutely.
Okay. I just wanted to clarify exactly what you do, because it's important and it's so specific. So not only did you write a book, you coach people, but you specifically coach people that are getting over a difficult situation like a victim or any kind of other situation that life comes, like a divorce or something like that?
Yes, I think, you know, we all face different things in our lives and obstacles in our lives to live the best life that we're designed to live. So if I can help somebody identify those obstacles and overcome those obstacles, and that's why I always do a 1-hour free coaching consultation with people to see if it's a good fit, to really see where they are at in life and make sure that they're, you know, in an appropriate situation with me and or to be able to refer them out to somebody else to help them live their best life. And so thank you for stopping and, you know, clarifying what victim advocates do, because I'm from Colorado, and Colorado Victim Services is alive and well, and we're very established in Colorado. There's always more work to do to help crime victims along, and there's so many states that still don't even have advocates, and I believe that advocates are such an important part of the recovery process to, you know, help victims through it. You know, so much of the focus is on defendants, and or people that are actually perpetrating these crimes, and not a lot of focus is helping victims. And so victim advocates really do play an important part in the process. And so there are many states that still have a long ways to go in that, but that is what I served in for 15 years. And I was nudged to do that. I had, you know, I was 21 years old when I first started in that career, and schooling doesn't prepare really, you know, for being a victim advocate. It can definitely help. But I just remember always I was nudged to, like, I knew I wanted to work around law enforcement, but I didn't want to be a cop, and I wanted to counsel people, but I didn't want to be a therapist, and I wanted to be in court, but I didn't want to be an attorney. And that's what's great about, I think, kids is they don't necessarily mm-hmm. need that definition. They're willing, mm-hmm. you know, to kind of open up and say, whatever that job is, that's the job I want. And mm-hmm. so I was very lucky to be able to do an internship and volunteer and get some experience and land a great jobs in the Denver metro area by just being able to assist in different police departments and help build policy and procedure and hopefully move that entire support system forward, because it is so vital. And through that process, I've seen some people just overcome some amazing, amazing things in their life. Just people that have completely inspired me by, you know, the difficulties and the trauma that they have faced and what they've done on the other side of it. It's definitely just been an inspiration to me and helped me grow as a person and help my perspective on the world.
Absolutely. So let's say someone like me, where I had a near-fatal car accident, which basically destroys your life, and there was nobody to help me. There was nobody that I can turn to of even have a clue on where do you go back when your life has been shattered on physically, mentally, emotionally. Is that the kind of advocates that you're talking about, or are you basically talking about specifically victims of a crime?
And sometimes people in car accidents are victims of a crime. So absolutely. Just people that have things happen to them where the police are involved, and it's life changing. We're just cruising along in life and we're not thinking anything of it. And then all of a sudden something happens like that. And it's absolutely life changing. You don't know the resources, and people sometimes feel very alone. You know, we know how to contact attorneys maybe or contact a counselor, but to really walk people through that process, it's very scary when you've never been through anything like that before.
Exactly. So you grew up in Colorado. Is that your
mm-hmm.
hometown?
Yes. I grew up in Denver.
And you went to college in Colorado too? In Denver also?
Yeah, I went to college in Colorado and in California. And then I did not leave Colorado again until I was 40 and then moved to Maui.
And so that was my next question. So on one fine day, you said, nope, Maui's for me? Or was it something, a process that you had to go through?
Oh, it was another nudge. I felt, ever since I've visited Maui numerous times, and ever since I was little, I've always felt kind of Maui is at home. But again, you just kind of write things off, you know, you just put them to the side. And a few years ago, about 4 or 5 years ago, I was sitting on the beach on Maui early morning over here on vacation. And I was actually, it was early January, so I was writing down my goals professionally for the year and just kind of taking that time to reflect. And I just meditated and I surrendered and said, what is next? And I literally sat back up and wrote in my notebook an entire outline for a nonprofit business to help high-risk kids and a for-profit business to do a cultural exchange tourism company on Maui to fund and provide sustainability for the nonprofit to help kids over here. And I wrote the entire outline out, came up with the name, came up with the logo, and literally the second before that happened, I had never thought of that. My plan was to retire after 20 years, go to Thailand, and help girls out of sex slavery. That was my plan. And I think we all have plans in life. You know, people always say don't make, you know, too big of plans because they change quite often. But what happened is I looked at that and I thought, that's so silly, or someday I'm going to do that. And I think that's the biggest word people use is someday that will happen, or someday I'd like to do that, or someday maybe that would happen. And I just thought you had to have a lot of money to live on Maui or be retired or grew up here or something. So I just negated it immediately. And I thought, that's so silly. And it just kept eating at me and kept eating at me. And I actually had a court order with my son that he had to stay in Colorado for visitation with his father. And I thought, well, you know, maybe after he graduates high school. And to make a long story short, I moved back to Colorado. And within 8 months, we had the freedom to be able to move over to Maui and implement and open up the nonprofit project, which is now working on Maui. And I thought, Maui, like, who needs help on Maui? Like, is there even kids that need help? You know, all I knew is I was staying at nice resorts. I didn't realize, you know, like, why am I getting nudged to move to Maui? And there is such a huge need in the islands for help. You know, it's just like anywhere else. Kids need help. Everybody has their own struggles and different family dynamics and all sorts of lack of resources. And so that project was opened very quickly. And the biggest thing about saying any of this, whether we're talking about victim services or open up the nonprofit or the book, is I can say, yes, I've done it. Like, my name's on some of these things, but it is so not about me. And that's what I really, truly believe there's a difference with the nudge. And this is why I'm so passionate about the nudge. Because although my name can be on it or my hand can be on it, it was never about me to begin with. Everything that I was nudged to do, I was only an instrument. As soon as I said yes, and as soon as it was in motion, the resources appeared, because it's not about me. It's not about autumn accomplishing or finishing or starting a project or a business. I might have thought so up front. Maybe, you know, for the first little bit of the project or the business, I thought, oh, this is for me. This is to help me pay my bills. This is something I want to do. This is a dream of mine. Even though it might be me focused up front, once you realize it's a nudge and once you follow that nudge, the ripple effect is huge. And it's always bigger than I imagined, because the ripple effect, I remember being a little girl watching my dad skip a rock across the water. And I was always fascinated by rocks skipping across the water and watching ripple effects. And that is, to me, why I'm so passionate about not only listening to my, you know, and being able to identify and surrender to the nudges in my own life, because I get to see the ripple effect. I get to see that this had so little to do with me, and it's so much more important for other people. The impact on other people, hopefully just an instrument in helping other people live their best life and to truly live their life alive. But I'm even more passionate about helping other people identify their nudges and follow nudges, because it's so fascinating to me to watch the ripple effect. So if somebody listens to that nudge, follows it, it might be about them or coaching them for a short time, but it's the ripple effect that is so magnificent to get to see, that we are instruments. And if we listen to that nudge and we accept the responsibility of that, what can come out of it is amazing to me. And that's what I'm passionate about. That's what I get excited about.
Wow, you touched on so many different things. And I think I have a lot of questions, and I'm sure everybody else has a lot of questions. So let me start with something really, really big. You touched on one thing that's been coming around a lot these days, which is meditation. And it seems that no matter where you look and no matter what program you look at for any kind of growth and any kind of self-improvement or enlightenment, it always comes down to meditation. So, and I also found that a lot of people have different definitions of meditation. So that's one big thing that I was wondering, what your definition of meditation is. And then a small question that I have is, do you live in Maui and do you only work in Maui, or what about the other islands?
Sure. So I'll start with meditation. It's funny you brought that up, because it's part of the story I actually skipped. What is funny about meditating that morning, and that you identified the importance of it, mm-hmm. is that I had never meditated. I have never taught to meditate. I was actually raised a little, pretty conservative, to where meditation was kind of one of those funky things that other people do. And I just never did it. I never thought I could hold still long enough. I thought, what is the point of meditation? And so, believe it or not, when I was in Maui and that nudge hit for me to move to Maui, the day before, this is how funny this is, you brought up meditation, how important it is. I believe too, that so much comes out of meditation and quiet in our minds. Is that I was supposed to walk into a fitness class. Well, they got the schedule mixed up, and I walked into a meditation class.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, my goodness, I don't want to be rude and walk out, so I'll just do this thing. And
wow.
I learned how to meditate for the first time, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had in my life. And I thought, how can sitting and being quiet be that amazing? and be that insightful and be that literally life-altering. And so that morning when I was sitting on the beach, that's when I decided, you know what, I'm just going to try this meditation thing on my own and, you know, shut my mouth and put down my notebook and not worrying about the goals of the new year, but just literally lay down and surrender. And I was quiet. And I think, especially in our society, we are not taught to listen. We're taught to do. Like, get up, get your workbook, read this book, listen to this podcast, go to this seminar, go to this workshop. But we're not taught to quiet our minds and to quiet our mouths. And for me, it's quieting my mouth in order to listen to what we're being called to do. And so many times we're just doers. And, you know, so to me, that meditation time is so important. It centers us. I mean, there's so many great things that come out of meditation. But for me, it's that time to listen, because I believe there's so many answers that we skip right over because we're just too busy. We just run around, and we're getting, especially today, we have so many things bombarding us as far as information. And for us to quiet ourselves, I believe, is vitally important. And so, yes, I did go back to Colorado, and then I do my work from Maui, but I absolutely have clients all over the world. And so my passion is to just reach to whoever, you know, I can help live their best life. So
let's clarify clients, what you look for in a client and how you find your clients. And also, is it affordable? Can anybody be a client that isn't the one percenter, that isn't that rich?
Sure.
Yeah. So the kind of clients that you're looking for, what do you look for? What's the kind of person that would be your ideal client?
As far as coaching, I take people that are looking for coaching personally. I look for people that are looking for a professionally or success coach as far as business, and it's any size of business. Maybe it's success in your career. Maybe it's actually starting a business. And that's why I really do that. I really focus on that 1 hour of consultation for free to see if there's that connection and see if I can truly be a benefit, because there's definitely people that I would refer out that I think that there's a better fit for them. But for me, my ideal client is for people that know something is there that they're being called to do that's bigger than themselves, or maybe it's just to go to the next level personally or professionally, but they just feel it, like they're ready to do it. And helping them identify those obstacles that's holding them back of living their life truly alive. So again, it doesn't matter if it's professionally or personally and or both. And during that 1 hour, we think of, I discuss what it really is like for what coaching is best for them, whether it's 15-minute phone call a week, whether it's an hour, whether it's once a month. And I work with so many people with different backgrounds, and I never want money to ever stop anybody from coaching or taking it to the next level. In my life personally, I've had to hire coaches in different levels. I mean, as a victim advocate, I had a great mentor and coach. And when I was first in network marketing, I've had great mentors, and I've had to hire coaches. And never did I have a lot of money. And then as I progressed in network marketing, I've had to hire other coaches and spend money on that. And business-wise, I've hired business coaches for myself personally. And I think at different times, coaches are needed. It's when you realize you're ready to go to the next level. And so I've had different coaches in my life, and it's made a huge difference. And that's what I hope to do in other people's lives as well.
Absolutely. People that need coaching also need to coach someone. It's interesting how when you get coached and you learn something powerful, the first thing you really want to do is go out and teach it to someone else, because that makes it 1,000 times more powerful for you. And I think that's one of the big secrets that people don't realize, is how powerful you get, what you gain by letting other people share that amazing discovery that you make about yourself by working with a coach. And that's why coaching is really an amazing business. Another thing that you said that is so huge, that we can talk about that for hours also, is that you wanted to help people, but you didn't want to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist. You wanted to help people through the court system, but you didn't want to be a lawyer. And you wanted to, you know, you wanted to do that, but you didn't want to go in the traditional form, which really those people, I don't know that they help that much. Because if you're talking to a therapist who is working with a client for 25 years to get over a problem, something isn't happening. 25 years should not be in therapy and still dealing with the same issues. So I totally understand why. Yeah, I totally understand why you wouldn't want to do that. And I think you identified something really big, because it definitely is how I felt. I wanted to help people, but when I went to learn to be a therapist, my teachers turned me off to that idea. And when I went to a mental institute to try to help people, I literally got so disgusted I couldn't get out of bed one morning and go back to school. And when I wanted to help people through law, I didn't want to go to law school. I applied to law school and I was revolted at the things I was hearing just by the application. So at least I tried. So I don't think it's just me and you. I think a lot of people, they want to be of service, but they don't want to be through the traditional methods of everyday life that the people are getting, because you don't want to be a lawyer or you don't want to be a psychiatrist or you don't want to be a psychologist, but only because for me, it's because you realize that you're really not going to give what you really want to give that way. And so that in itself is such a huge feeling that people have. So you touched on the nudge, which everybody has, but most people ignore. So you basically help people identify their nudge. You help people overcome the obstacles that are standing there on their everyday life that it happens. And then you've been through your personal experience. Going through a divorce could not have been easy unless you're the one in a million that had one of the friendliest divorces in town.
Yes, not easy.
No. And then another thing that is really huge is you said that most people wait for someday to follow that nudge. And the fact of the matter is that someday never happens, because someday is now. So let's give everybody permission to know that someday is right now and you can take action. And you can call Autumn and talk about it if you want, because like she said, you're offering one free hour to just discuss everything and to see if in fact you are a good match. And I think that's a huge gift. That's a huge gift that you're offering right up the front. And so what happens if somebody wants to talk to you? Like, for example, if somebody's listening right now and they say, you know, I have this business and I like it and I'm doing really well, but I'm just not doing as well as I would like to. Like you said, you're looking for people that want to go to the next level, that want to do something. What would be the first thing they do? Like, what would they expect from you?
They can go to my website, livingyourlifealive.com, and reach me through that, or livingyourlifealive@gmail.com. And just to schedule that, we can do either Skype or phone. And hopefully that hour just provides some value, if nothing else, hopefully provides some value and direction of the way that, you know, different ideas and different resources that they have. One of my strengths is definitely resources and connecting people to what I believe will also help them. But a lot of it is just learning about somebody and where they want to go, and then providing that, those resources for people. But one thing about coaching that I think is that's helped me so much when I've hired coaches is that, just like you said, it's not therapy. It's not all about talking, but there's that accountability piece to it. And I know for me, especially being an entrepreneur, and there's a lot of people that are entrepreneurs or thinking about being an entrepreneur or thinking about doing something on the side or thinking about starting a nonprofit or whatever it may be, but it's more of like a solo project, is that it's kind of easy to hide out and not do those things. Or if you are doing them, maybe you're not doing it to the best of your ability, and you know that. And for me, I know that sometimes I just need that accountability piece for somebody to hold me accountable to my dreams or my, you know, that nudge and figuring out what that is. So we just set up something that provides that accountability with ease. And of course, it's on their own timetable. But I think that for coaching, it's not just a feel-good process. It's definitely digging down deeper and figuring out what are those obstacles and why are those obstacles there. And then to set some accountability around resources to help people move forward. Because for me, coaching, I love when my clients are saying, Autumn, I'm done. Like, I'm done with you. I've done it. I've accomplished it. I've succeeded. I've moved on. There is nothing better. You know, I love that feeling of my clients saying that to me. And that's why, that's what gets me excited about coaching. And that's why I want to make sure it's a good fit. And helping actual people truly live their life alive, because again, it's about that ripple effect.
Yeah, exactly. And so you mentioned your book that you wrote, and you have a book that has the title of exactly the title of what we did with this show. And the name of the book is called living your life. Let's see. Have you
yep,
book
living
right
your
here.
Life alive.
Living your life alive, which says a lot more than just one thing, because it can mean on a physical level, it can mean on a spiritual level, and an emotional level. People live a lot like an ostrich. They bury their head in the sand. And mm-hmm. looking through living your life alive, you also, again, practically each chapter can be an entire book. And you know that. You know that this book could have been 25,000 times bigger than it is. And so you condensed it into one book so that people can actually understand it and apply it. And I would say, really, so if I want to have, let's say, a session with you, an hour session with you, if I read the book beforehand and I know what I'm waiting for, I think that would make that session so much more powerful, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I have people that find the book somehow or read the book and then contact me and say, you know, I'd love to coach with you. And other people that I first somehow meet and we do the coaching first, they end up getting the book, because the book, each chapter is about something. So let's say it's about unmasking ourselves or playing it safe, whatever it may be. But the end of every chapter has exercises in it. And to me, although I'm the author of the book, we all have our own answers. And those exercises, you're to each person individually, when they put that pen to paper and actually work through some things, that is where the big movement happens. It's not my words. It's not my book. It's the exercises at the end of each chapter that I really see people see movement in their own lives or have those aha moments and get to move forward quickly. And that's my job, is to kind of waken or, you know, shake people and wake them up and get those ostriches' heads out of the
sand. And so let me kind of mention a few of the chapters that you have, because like you said, each chapter is a world on its own. Chapter one starts with the nudges, which you already mentioned what they are and the ability for people to identify them. Chapter two is waking up to reality. Waking up to reality is, it's really hard, because most people live kind of like in a hypnosis, for lack of a better word, either a hypnosis or a fake reality. And what I find a lot, and tell me if you find that too, is when you tell someone, well, you know, you don't have to worry about that because maybe you can kind of wake up and change your reality. And the answer you'll get is, well, I'm just being realistic. And so that's the catch 22, because before you wake up to reality, you're really thinking you're being realistic and you're just living your life according to the reality that you think this is it. And after that, after waking up to reality, I think you step into, which you touch in chapter three, which you say experiencing the unimaginable. Then and only after you wake up the flat to reality, you can experience the unimaginable. Because if you think your reality is, for example, that you're just going to barely have enough money to eat, I'm being realistic and that's all I have. So every penny I make, I'm going to hoard it and try not to spend it because realistically speaking, I don't have any money and I don't see how I'm going to make any more. And waking up to reality means waking up to the reality that things could be different than what they are, right? That's what you mean by that.
Yes. And also, so, just like you said, being honest about where we're at, but also knowing that more is possible, that there's a lot more out there, that abundance is waiting. And being realistic about where we truly are in life. Like, are we in a great place? Are you where you want to be in life? Do you wake up feeling excited and feeling alive? Or are you just getting by? I mean, what a horrible feeling to live a mediocre life when you can, you know, live an extraordinary one. It's not like some of us are just designed to live an extraordinary life and some of us are supposed to live mediocre lives. We're all supposed to live extraordinary lives because we're all designed uniquely. I mean, if we were designed to just live mediocre lives, it'd all kind of be designed the same.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what you say, and I'm quoting what you wrote in the book, is who am I to help you? I'm just a girl who chose to, and you can go ahead and tell us, like you said, you are there to be able to do all those amazing things, but other people are too. And so why you? Why is it that you are there able to do it and not everybody is?
I think it's saying yes. And I know that seems so simple, but yes is a choice. People wait for the right weather, the right time, the right money, the right partner, the right this, a lot of times if we just say, yes, I'm willing to live this life, I don't know how, but I'm making the decision to do it. What happens is everything conspires to help you live that life, to help you be happier, to help you have more money, to help you with that job, to help you with that business, whatever. But a lot of it is just we right up on the edge of saying yes and committing to that yes and committing to our lives and committing to the possibilities and asking what else is possible. We might not see a way out. We might not know what else is possible for our lives, but just asking what else is possible and knowing that it's okay for you to have it. A lot of times we just don't see value. We don't see ourselves. We don't see the value in ourselves. And so we wait to get all of these things, whether it's a title, a house, a whatever it is, to be able to live that life. And we don't have to. We can just say yes. You guys can say yes today. If you're listening right now, you can say yes to a life where you actually feel alive when you wake up and you tingle from head to toe. And I'm not saying 24 hours a day. Not everybody walks on euphoria all the day. I wrote a book called Living Your Life Alive, and not every day do I feel totally alive and happy and jump out of bed. But most days, most moments in my life, I can absolutely feel alive. And I know how to feel alive because there were times when I didn't feel alive, where I had my head stuck in that sand, accepting, you know, the life that I had, you know, my reality. I just thought, you know what, this is it. And I stuck my head right in that sand. And so there were times where I masked myself, where I was absolutely not joyful, but I pretended I was joyful. I pretended I was fine. And we all go through that in life where we're not really feeling alive and something is holding us back for whatever, you know, whatever that reason is. And so I do feel like that decision is just to say yes, yes, say yes to your life because you're worth it.
I like that you said I pretended that I was alive, but I bet you didn't know you were pretending. You thought you were genuine. How do you identify that it was a pretending and not that you weren't really alive?
It was a moment. I was actually shopping with a girlfriend, and we were just being girls, you know, trying on different outfits, and we were laughing about something, and I heard her laugh, and I remember it was like a brick right over the head again of thinking, oh my gosh, when was the last time I laughed like that? And you guys, our baseline should be joy. Our baseline should be happiness. It shouldn't be a rare thing or something that we don't feel that, you know, gut laughing or that joy, or we catch ourselves just driving down the road smiling and we don't even remember why we're smiling or know why we're smiling. That should be our baseline. We shouldn't struggle to feel like that. We shouldn't struggle to laugh like that. And I remember thinking, when was the last time I laughed like that? And I thought, I can't laugh like that. Something's wrong. Like, why can't I laugh like that? Why can't I experience joy like that? What happened to me? And really having to sit down and identify why, what is it? What's wrong? And that's me pulling my head right out of the sand going, I need to wake up. I need to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's those moments, like those quick moments that just kind of snap us out of waking up to reality. Like, why is my friend laughing and I can't? Like, what is wrong? But sometimes that's our reality, is that we just keep going. It's like, you know, a hamster on a wheel. But sometimes it's a big trauma. Sometimes it's that car accident. Sometimes it's something else that happens in our life that wakes us up. And we think we have to make a change. We can't keep living like this.
Right. Things happen. Things are going to happen in life. So what you're saying is that it's about how you handle the things that are going to happen, not about what is happening. Because whatever is going to happen is going to happen.
Absolutely. I think it's easy to say, oh, you know, I think people look and say, oh, well, it's easy to live your life alive when you have money or you live on the beach or when, you know, you have that perfect partner, or you have the perfect house. But not everything is about, you know, not every day is a great day, but it's being able to, you know, to me, it starts with gratitude. In any situation, there you can find gratitude in something. And sometimes we have to start. Sometimes we don't, it seems like we don't have a lot to be grateful for, but we do have to start at the basics, and that's how we can get better every day.
That's there's so much in there that I can't even begin to talk about it. So I'm going to go back a little bit to your personal story. And I was wondering if you can let us know what it is that made you actually sit down and write the book. I know that it's not an easy task. And I know that a huge majority of people that say they're going to write a book don't really actually ever finish. So what is it that inspired you to write a book, and how did you manage to really complete it, put it out there? I mean, I'm so proud of it. I love what you wrote.
Oh, well, thank you. If you knew me, I cannot sit still for over 5 minutes, sit in a chair for over 5 minutes. So to actually sit and write a book is just, mm-hmm. It was absolutely nothing I ever wanted to do. It was something I could never see that I could ever accomplish it or do it. And it was one of those nudges. Again, it was a nudge. My ex-husband actually handed me a book after we were divorced that said how to write a book. And I thought, why is he giving me a book on how to write a book? He said, because you're going to write a book. And I thought, this guy's crazy. I have nothing to write about. I have nothing to, I don't want to write a book. And that was years ago. And then when I moved to Maui, within about an 8-week period, I had 4 or 5 people walk right up to me and say, oh, you're an author, or you're writing a book, right? And I was like, no. And then 2 authors walked right up to me and said, oh, I'm an author. You are too. And I was like, these are the nudges that if you don't wake up to the nudge, mm-hmm. and I put that nudge on, literally at the bookshelf for years, and I put it just up on the shelf and thought, that's silly. I can't write a book. I don't want to write a book. I can't even hold still. I don't know how to write a book. And the resources appeared within 2 weeks. I was in a writing group, and the next thing, I hired a publishing coach that helped me with an outline and helped me see that it's absolutely possible. And a lot of times, when I think something's not possible or it's not for me, and I think it's for somebody else. It's for special people, or someday maybe once I'm skilled enough, or once I have this in place, then I'll do it. For me, I've had to learn that I'll probably never believe in me 100%, or I'll never believe in the process 100%, or I'll never believe the resources are going to be there 100%. But all I have to do is believe that it's possible. And if I say yes to the possibility and I'm able and willing to do the work for it, it gets accomplished because those resources appear. And so a lot of it is that I don't have to believe 100%. I think people wait to believe 100%. I'll do this business if I believe it's going to be successful. I'll go on this venture if I know it's going to be successful. Well, you guys, we don't know. I mean, so many of us don't know. And that's how great successful businesses and projects are born, is that people don't know, but they're willing to take the risk. And I'm not saying, take silly risks or uncalculated risks. But I'm saying is that if you can just find that belief that it's possible, you don't have to believe 100% in you or the process. Most of the time we don't believe in ourselves 100%, but that is not a reason to not start. The reason to start is when you feel that nudge. That's the answer. Is that you need to move forward. Because imagine mm-hmm. what it's going to cost you if you don't move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So what is the difference between intuition and the nudge? Because it sounds very similar.
Yes, and a lot of times people do believe it's similar or process it as similar. To me, intuition is something that happens in the current situation. I have intuition about this, or somebody sits down next to me and for some reason I have intuition. Something's telling me to move away from them, or I have intuition to go up and talk to somebody that maybe I was like, why would I want to talk to them? And something kind of, I have intuition, something is more in your gut. To me, intuition mm-hmm. is inside of us. It's like gut feeling. To me, the nudge mm-hmm. comes way far from outside of us. To me, that mm-hmm. is God in my life. I always feel that nudge way outside of myself. It's not on any radar. It's not a feeling inside. I usually don't feel good or bad about it. It's not something that I have a feeling about. It's more of a big idea, an idea that's not on our radar, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people coming over to you and telling you you're an author when it's not exactly the first thing on your mind or even think about it. That's what you mean. It's not from inside you. It's outside you, that your environment actually led you to write the book. Of course, you had
yes, to. Yes, it had nothing to do with intuition.
right. You had to eventually sit down and do it. But it's almost like the universe or God did not want to stop until you got the message. Do it. Write that book.
Absolutely.
It's a great book. And I'm really glad that you wrote it. So now that you have written the book and that you've been working as a coach, do you believe a little bit more in yourself that you can do it and that you could be successful than you did 5 years ago?
Absolutely. Every time we take a step or do one action, a And it builds belief. So it doesn't matter if I'm working with a client, like in my network marketing business. I had no business being in business. I'd never been in business before. So what makes me in business and now at one of the top levels in my company is that I had no belief in myself. I had no knowledge. But every time I took a step, it built belief. Every time we build that knowledge, every time we have feedback, every time we have experiences, good and bad, failing forward, failing forward, failing forward, it helps us build that belief in ourselves. And then I do believe as we build that belief, it can slip back down at any time. And we have to do things to build our belief constantly. Same with writing a book, same with coaching other people. We can build our belief as things go along. We get feedback. We have those experiences that help us believe in ourselves. We have those wins. We have those successes. And so what I see, though, is most people take the sidelines in their life. And you cannot, it's like judging football from the sidelines. It's easy for me to watch football on Football Sunday and yell at everybody on the TV on what they're doing wrong. Well, I've never played football, so, you know, it's not a really great judgment of it. We can only just yell from the sidelines, but we're not an active participant. And what I see is most people can sit on the sidelines of their own life, not even of watching football or watching other people. They're sitting on the sidelines of their own life thinking, okay, well, this is a good safe spot for me. But to get on the field, that's what builds belief, is every single play that you play builds that belief. And good and bad, learning, you know, from good situations and bad situations, that's how we build belief. But we're never going to build belief in ourselves if we don't get out and play. We have to get out and play.
Yeah, we have to get out and play. You can't just sit on the sofa and expect the roof to open up and for you to get what you want, because obviously it has to come down to the physical level. And so, wow, time really does fly. And we touched on some really important things. So if you never do anything further, if you just listen to those important things that we touched on today, you're already going to be starting on a better journey and on a stronger journey. But if you really want to make it stronger, hiring a coach is one of the, I don't know if it's even a luxury, it might even be a necessity in everybody's life.
Yeah.
And so here are some of the things that I touched on, that we touched on, that is really, really important. And the first thing is feeling the nudge. So it's not, like you said, it's not like we don't feel the nudge, that we don't acknowledge that we feel it, or we don't always become aware of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the question that we ask is, how many times have you been nudged and ignored it? And if you ask yourself that question in itself, that in itself is already a lifesaver or a life changer. The other thing that we touched on that I think is really powerful is identifying the obstacles. So you can sit down and try to identify your own obstacles, which is definitely doable. But I think if they sit down with you, you might have a way to extract those obstacles with a lot more clarity than I would if I was trying to do it myself. Is that part of your job too?
Yes, and I love that word extract, because I think when we're looking in our own lives, we're analyzing our own lives, you know, we have a lot of junk between our ears and it's not always clear of what's going on. We might think it's one thing and it's something else. And so I love that word extract, because that is my job, is to listen and examine and extract. Yes, that's a great word.
Yeah, I just thought of that word because my tooth is about to be extracted.
Oh, no.
Not a pleasant sight. Another thing that you mentioned is, and I think that really is the kind of people that you want to work with, is with everything that you wanted to do that, but not that way. But the bottom line of what your heart really drove you to, is you wanted to do something to be of service, to be able to help people, to be able to make life better for yourself, of course, but also for everybody that you can possibly touch. Is that really what you wanted? Did I get that right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so that's a really powerful thing. So I'm thinking you probably, most of the people that you will work with is people that want to turn around and take that knowledge that they learn with you and then turn around and help other people do the same thing.
Yes. A lot of times my clients, are something simple that they have, something that they're really good at. Maybe it's just a hobby that they think is a hobby, but I see it as a whole career, like tons of artists and photographers that I work with are people that are, you know, to me, they just kind of minimize their talent all the way to somebody that is already helping a lot of people in their career, but kind of know that they need to do more with it, or they're feeling nudged to do more or in a different environment. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're kind of feeling safe in one environment, but they're feeling called to actually help more people in a different environment. And so it is, it's creating that pathway, that safe pathway for them to feel like, yes, I can take this and kind of come out to the world with my talent or my gifts, and or build a pathway to where people feel safe to really take their career to a whole nother level. And so it's really about creating those pathways.
Mm-hmm. And making life more powerful. And then another thing mm-hmm. that we touched on that I think is really the foundation and the basis for everything is the meditation, learning how to meditate mm-hmm. or, as you put it, be still and listen, the listening skills, which the society is so much lacking in that. Do you teach people how to meditate too?
Yes, and I encourage it. I'm probably not the best teacher with meditation, is that I encourage, and I have some great resources to be able to have people learn that, because I struggled once. I thought, oh my gosh, this is such a powerful thing. Like, how am I just coming across this now? Is that, you know, I wanted to learn how to get, benefit the most from it. And again, we're good at things for a while and we slip back and we forget, or we don't build that into our daily routine. And I believe so many things just come out of being able to learn tools so we can work them in daily, rather than a daily schedule, or when we know to be able to pull those tools out of our toolbox and say, this is what I need. This is the situation I'm in right now, and I really need to meditate. And now I have that tool to be able to pull and to utilize in my life. And so I want to help people create those, you know, a lot of different tools in their toolboxes to be able to access all through their life, whether it's personally or professionally.
Yeah, totally. And meditation is one of those tools. And I personally think that we should be teaching first graders how to meditate so that they're not afraid of it and that they can utilize it in their life. Could you imagine if you learned how to meditate in first grade? How powerful would that be?
I can't even imagine. I was talking to a friend about that actually yesterday, is that
wow.
I can't even imagine teaching kids to be still. And instead of, like, I mean, look at how inundated they are with information right now, but mm-hmm. I was talking to my son yesterday, who's 18, and he was all riled up about something. And I just said, when was the last time you were even by yourself or sat mm-hmm. by yourself or listened, mm-hmm. like just took that deep breath and sat 5 minutes by yourself somewhere? And mm-hmm. he's like, I don't remember the last time. And I'm like, well, then no wonder you're off center. You know, no wonder you're feeling lost and being pulled in 15 mm-hmm. different directions, because if you don't know which direction you're going into and you can't take that time to listen to that guidance, then you're going to be pulled in 15 different ways. And that's one of the biggest things I realize about my own life, is that when I'm feeling pulled and scattered, it's because I'm not meditating. I'm just getting pulled. And when I meditate, mm-hmm. I immediately see clarity.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, because there's so many different energies pulling us in so many different directions on purpose, besides all the distractions that we ourselves kind of, oh, look at this, look at that, look at that. So yeah, that's one of the really free and powerful tools that we have right at our fingertips. So use it. That was one powerful
yes.
message here. And then another thing that you covered, I mean, you touched on so many different things. I can't even begin to cover everything. So I'm just trying to take the gist of the most important things. And you said, and I'm going to say it my way, don't wait for a brick wall to hit you over the head.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait, because you already got hit with a brick over your head, and you so that you can help people not have to wait until that point when they have to get hit over the head. You can save them that trouble. Right?
Yes.
You
absolutely do not wait.
Mm-hmm. So how do you overcome what is holding you back from following that nudge? Because one of the ways to overcome it, obviously, is to get hit with a brick over the head. But how do you work with people to overcome that? And since we have like 2 minutes, we'll try to wrap that up in 60 seconds.
Yes, I believe that, of course, just saying yes to your own life and knowing that you're important enough and knowing that you do matter and that you're uniquely made. I've started what I thought was just going to be a book, but it's definitely a movement. So when you visit the website, livingyourlifealive.com, mm-hmm. you can get daily tips. So like, or not daily, like weekly tips on to just keep our minds there. Like, we need to be mindful of the way we're living our lives. But also, there's a YouTube channel on there. People from all over the world send in videos on what living their life alive means to them and the nudges and what's affecting. And to be around like-minded people, to, you know, to be able to be part of this movement. And remember that living your life alive is important. And please reach out to me and stay connected, whether it's, you know, free coaching or whether it's just to be able to chit-chat and connect. I love hearing people's stories. I love being able to connect with other people that are like-minded, that are wanting to move forward, and that knowing that nudges make a difference in other people's lives. So I would just love to stay connected, and that website's a great way to be able to do it.
That is really powerful. And so I would like to wrap it up with, first of all, thanking you so much for joining us today. Not only was it a lot of fun, but it's also so many things that we have learned just by having a simple conversation. So I don't even think that you can imagine what you will learn by reading the book and following that movement. So give us the website again.
It is livingyourlifealive.com.
And also you will have that link and a few other links to be able to hook up with Autumn and follow her and see if you want any more. And so the book, you are the author of the book, Living Your Life Alive, which is learning to listen and follow your inner nudge. And I'm going to end with your powerful word that say, I wrote this book for you. It's time to start living your life alive and expect the unexpected.
Awesome. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you. It's totally been my pleasure. And I wish you a magical journey. And let your passion be your potion. Have a wonderful day, a wonderful week. And we are looking forward to hearing lots of great things from you.
Thank you. Mahalo.
Flying high like a bird with your aviation.